Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota colleges and universities invite students from around the world to study here. But do those students feel welcome in America? We're talking with SDPB education reporter Jackie Hendry this month about international students in South Dakota higher education. In part two of the series, we explore the challenges of getting them here. And Jackie Hendry joins us now from Vermilion. Hey, Jackie, welcome back.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me.
What is it about South Dakota that attracts those global students in the first place?
Well, so far, it looks like affordability continues to be the theme. Mm. So generally speaking, there can be as much as $10,000 to sometimes $20,000 difference in the tuition and fees that international students might be paying here versus even a comparable school in Colorado, even regionally. And a reminder, international students generally aren't eligible for, you know, government, like U.S. government loans, financial aid, and they're paying full non-resident prices for that education.
All right, what about scholarships for them?
You might get a small number of maybe Fulbright scholars. There are some sponsored student programs, so maybe their government or some corporate entity or somebody is funding them from back home. But for the most part, there aren't many scholarships dedicated for international students. An exception to that, actually, is the School of Mines, which I visited last week. Within the last few years, they've had a very specific scholarship program that got started. So last week was the Cultural Expo at South Dakota School of Mines. It's a two-day event where different international student groups showcase their cultures and food. I got to meet with a few students there. And one of them was junior computer science major Soam Mayek, and he explained that he found School of Mines specifically through this unique scholarship program.
And I came here because of a scholarship given to me by an Indian company based in Goa. So the CEO of the company was an alumni from the school, so he decided to give something back to the school and to the state. So 4 years ago, he started the scholarship program wherein 4 to 5 students get a certain amount of scholarship only to this school.
So the CEO of Fomento, which is a mineral extraction company, is an alumnus of the School of Mines. He's from Goa, India, the smallest state in India. He graduated about 40 or so years ago and had such a wonderful experience that once he reached a certain level of success, he wanted to give back both to the students in his home state in India and the School of Mines. So 4 years ago, he started the Fomento Scholarship Program with the idea that once those students reach a certain level of success, they can then in turn give back to that scholarship fund, but specifically for School of Mines.
Wow. So this student came here because of a scholarship like that, but that might not be the case for most students. What are some of the ways that colleges recruit students then?
Fairly similar to any other recruitment strategies, but on a much, much larger scale. It's all about awareness. So maybe people in California couldn't point to South Dakota on a map. Imagine around the globe. So face-to-face, of course, is always a plus. SDSU, for instance, they might bring on their recruiting trips an associate dean with the engineering school or something to talk to students face-to-face. Otherwise, it's about kind of building that brand recognition. So we have the World Wide Web now, a wonderful tool for many things, especially international recruitment. School of Mines, for instance, they build up their international admissions website and social media. So when they have a student team that's doing something really excellent, I think it was their mining and mucking team just won an international competition, they throw that up on their international Facebook page and say, look at what our students get to do.
Right.
And, you know, similar to our conversations back when we were talking about potentially moving USD's law school, a lot of awareness now for any kind of student, your first contact with your school is probably going to be online.
Right.
Soni Popuri, she is also from India, another alum from School of Mines. She followed her husband here to go to school, and he found School of Mines by searching online for a research institution specializing in nanoscience and affordability, and that's how they got here.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, that letter comes in the mail or you find something online and that face-to-face, that human, you know, contact is so important. But, you know, my daughter's a junior, colleges, you know, come to the school where she's at and, you know, sit in the cafeteria so she can come meet them. But if you're recruiting, it's easy to come to a school in Sioux Falls. You can't visit every country on the planet
Right.
Earth. So how do they prioritize, you know, what they're looking for and who they want to bring?
A lot of it is looking at the trends. So last week we heard from Greg Weimer, SDSU's International Scholars Director. He says when they're considering where to visit on recruiting trips, they're looking at both the economics of the country they're visiting to be sure students could afford to come in the first place, but also at the same time that those students would see a value in traveling across the world for education in the first place.
For example, we don't go to a lot of European countries. The economics are right, but the quality of education and the ability to get an education in their home country is such that they don't see the need to come to the United States to study. Some do, but it's not as many students.
So in a lot of ways, it's about kind of that idea of return on investment. Of course, schools might want to expand to less common markets, but because international students, again, are kind of a nice leveling source of income for higher ed institutions, as numbers are starting to drop, schools are more likely to stick with the places that they know they can recruit students.
And that number is dropping again because of global politics.
Yeah. From the conversations that I've had so far, basically everyone has referenced at some point how the political climate is at least a partial reason for some of the downturn that we're seeing. For example, when I was out at School of Mines, I had a very interesting conversation with Susie Adlin. She's their director of the Ivanhoe International Center, and she's been in that role for nearly 30 years and has this great insight of kind of the political context and how that can change and how that impacts international education. For example, of course, she was there during 9/11 and referenced how for about 5 years there was an impact on international student numbers and increased scrutiny, but she noted that President Bush was fairly supportive of international education. So based on some of these previous comments I've been hearing and keeping that in mind, I asked her opinion on the impact of current U.S. politics on international students.
This is different in that there's actually a restriction on visas from certain countries, and the rhetoric that's going on right now, it's really, I think, somewhat off-putting to international students thinking about coming here, because they don't think that they're welcome here. Although, of course, we want them to come here, and we think it's really important.
So, at least in School of Mines' case, some of these countries with the visa restrictions, it's not a catastrophic impact on their enrollment numbers necessarily. But
right.
It's kind of back to harnessing that power of perception, and we're seeing some of that also on social media. There's a national hashtag: "You are welcome here," and School of Mines, Black Hill State University, some of their international websites have videos of people on campus basically trying to send that message to students: you're welcome here.
Right, and I wonder about the perception of unpredictability, or how quickly something might change under the current administration, where you might be welcomed and then things could shift and people are afraid to make that kind of commitment. I wonder, that's just something I'm wondering, not something anybody has told me.
Right, yeah. And I have heard a couple of people say that some students are nervous, but it's a matter of kind of building up those resources for them and just kind of wait and see.
What's it like for those students to go through that process? Is that something you're looking at in the future? Or is that something you're already starting to see hints of?
There's a little bit that I've seen so far. For instance, someone I was able to talk to, Bianca Hutzler from Germany, while I was out at School of Mines. She's an intern from Black Hill State University, and she worked me through the admissions process. You apply to your college. Assuming someone is able to translate your credentials. For instance, in Germany, a 1.0 is the equivalent of a 4.0 GPA in America. But if you're an American and you don't know that, you see a 1.0, you're not going to be super impressed. So certain resources, translations, all sorts of forms. And then if you get to a far enough point, then you schedule an interview at your local American embassy. And Bianca tells me that can be the most nerve-wracking part of the process.
If the officer at the embassy decides not to give you a visa because, out of whatever reason, you went through that whole process and at the financial aspect for nothing, pretty much. But I was lucky, so I got my visa.
So,
all right, Jackie, what's next in this story, in this series?
Well, next week, I'm hoping to bring more voices from both international and domestic students about kind of how, once they're here, how they feel that sense of welcome, build that sense of community, working with maybe mentor students or partner families in that process of adjusting to a new culture.
SDPB's education reporter, Jackie Hendry, we'll see you next week. Great stuff. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori.